Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, July 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Dr. Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York, is in the studio today to answer your questions about all your feline and canine companions. The Pets and Vets Show, you know, it's a popular one, so call early to get in line. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 if you have a question about your pet. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org if you want to do it that way. But the number, once again, 800-348-2551. It's Pets and Vets today. Dr. Ron Scharf will be here to answer your calls after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today, and here to take your calls, Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf is a 1985 graduate of the Veterinary College at Cornell with extensive background in conventional veterinary medicine, and our number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a question about your kitty cat or your doggy, 800-348-2551. You can tweet us if you want at WAMCVoxPop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Ron Scharf, welcome back, sir.
Thank you so much, Ray. It's great to be here, as usual.
Nice to have you here on a very summery kind of muggy day.
Oh, yeah. It's close out there. It's hot and muggy.
Somewhat cool here in Studio A.
So Studio is perfect.
Excellent. Well, anything work-related you want to mention before we get started with the calls?
Oh, there are always things going on, Ray. And with this kind of weather, it makes me think about, you know, making sure hydration is very important, not only for us, but for our pets, especially the dogs that are outside. The lightning makes me think about dogs with noise phobia. That's a big thing. July 4th, of course.
Yep.
The fireworks, thunderstorms. There are ways to deal with that, though. Planning ahead produces much better results than just doing something that day. There are behavior modification steps that could be taken to kind of acclimate a dog who is set off by sudden noise to not be a set off by noise. But it takes time, takes effort. Behavior modification, I tell people sometimes it's like turning the Titanic. It takes a while.
Yeah. So, that didn't work out all that well.
Well, they weren't turning fast enough.
They were turning downward. They certainly were. How many dogs do you think, what percentage of dogs have this problem with loud noises?
I think it's more common than you would think. I think it is one of the most, if not the most, common anxiety disorder in a dog. Percentage-wise, I'd guess single digits, but I would imagine low single digits, not that many in the population. But if I had to pick a number, I would say 2-3%.
How about cats?
I've never seen a cat with a noise phobia.
You know, our cat, one of the kids pointed this out. We had some thunder roll through a few days ago. Cat kind of just went to the couch and sort of hunkered down. I mean, it was a pretty bad storm, but I don't think we ever saw her do that before.
So you think that the noise made the cat a little concerned?
I think so. I think that's what the general feeling was among my children.
Well, usually when you have a nervous cat, when they're anxious about something, they're not going to the couch. They're hiding themselves, kind of like what you mentioned before. They tuck themselves away into a closet or under a bed.
Right.
They feel like it's more protected. So being on the couch, it's interesting for me to hear that that seemed to you or your kids to be that the cat was anxious about the noise.
Are you saying my kids were wrong?
I'm saying your kids
are
perfect.
We can stop the show
perfect.
Right now. Okay. All right. Well, then let's take some calls. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. And we start with Cassandra in Shandaken. Cassandra, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So my question is about my pit mix. He's about 12, 13 months maybe. And he had issues with, we thought, maybe his hips or his knees ever since we got him at 17 weeks. So we brought him into the vet. We did an X-ray. The conclusion was that he had an elastic cruciate ligament, but he's not done growing yet. The X-ray showed that his growth plate's not closed yet. So he's not a candidate for surgery. So right now he's just kind of living in agony. We're giving him Lemidol. I'm wondering if there's anything else that we can do for him, maybe a brace or some kind of supplement, because it's consistently getting worse. The vet had told us to put him on rest, but it doesn't seem to be helping, and he's an active puppy, so I don't really know how much rest to give him. I'm just kind of confused about the whole thing a little bit.
Sure thing. So, Cassandra, has an X-ray been done?
Yes.
Okay. And it did not show anything?
Well, they said that the X-ray didn't specifically show anything orthopedic, but that while he was under sedation, they did an exam that showed elasticity in both of his cruciate ligaments, worse than his left knee.
Okay. So that is an important thing as far as knee problems, which are called in a dog a stifle, by the way, they will not often show up on an X-ray except for the reverberations of the injury. In other words, inflammation can show up on an X-ray, but a soft tissue structure like a ligament will not show up that it's torn on X-ray because the X-ray beam goes right through it, whether it's intact or torn. So it is important to examine them under light sedation so that they're sedated enough to be able to let you manipulate their joint that might hurt them, but they're not so sedated that they can't register that what you just did hurts them. So that was perfect to do that. However, personally, I am not familiar with a thing called elastic cruciate ligaments. They're very short, very broad, and they're very important stabilizers of that knee or stifle. And I would wonder whether or not there's a tear, because you, I think, mentioned the pleural form. In other words, that the vet said that both knees had elastic ligaments. Well, then why is one a problem and the other one's not? So I would consider, Cassandra, having that pup looked at by an orthopedic surgeon or a surgeon. A board-certified veterinary surgeon has a lot more experience than a general practitioner, which I also am, and I am personally not shy about sending question marks over to an orthopedic surgeon, because the sooner you diagnose something, the sooner you know the best way to take care of it, and you could choose whether or not you want to do something about it. So if there's a question, and if there is that much pain, and the Rimadyl and the rest are not doing the job, Cassandra, I'd go for a specialist.
Thank you, Cassandra. We appreciate the call. But isn't 1 year old a little young to have tears like that?
Yes, it's very young. I don't know if I've ever seen a 1 year old with a cruciate ligament rupture. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It means that youth confers not immunity, but a lot of resilience that you don't have when you get older, whether you're a dog or a person. So, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen, but I'm sure that it happens.
Okay.
I'm sure that it happens.
Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest today. It's Pets and Vets on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Susan in Kingston. Susan, you're next.
Yes, hello. I have two questions. One, my cat likes to try to scratch my new furniture, and I don't want her to do that, and I've tried everything that I can to stop her from doing it. So I need a solution for that. She does have something to scratch on, but lately she just doesn't want to touch it. Anyway, because maybe I just moved. The other one, my dog loves to tip his water dish over. And he does it purposely. I swear, he picks it up, and all the water goes everywhere, and I can't get him to stop doing it. So I only put just a little bit in there at a time.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Well, Susan, I'll take the second one first because it's way easier. All you do is get a metal, one of these triangular sided metal water bowls. And there's no way it's very little likelihood that your dog would be able to grab that smooth metal exterior because the wall, it might be more kind of vertical to the floor on the inside. But on the outside, it's like an angle, like a 40-degree angle or something. And so physically, it would be almost impossible for the dog to lift that up. So I get a broad-based water bowl. Metal usually is the way to go for this kind of situation. The cat, that's another story, which often is the case.
Yeah.
Cats are another story.
Yep.
Usually. So that is a normal behavior, Susan, for a cat to scratch things. So it's tough to erase a behavior that is normal for a species. So I would imagine you said you've tried a lot of things already, so you might have already tried getting a scratching post, trying to get the cat attracted to the scratching post by sprinkling some catnip on it, maybe, if your cat's a catnip type cat.
Yeah.
And put various things hanging off of the scratching post that'll attract the cat there, you know, like a weight coming down from some kind of...
she doesn't have a formal scratching post. Maybe
get a formal
one.
One
up today since I'm out.
Get a formal one,
Susan. Because what she has is one that you lay on the floor.
Well, the more the better. You know, cats
they
like activity which oftentimes is missing. So, for instance, cats love jungle gyms. Okay, they like height. They like being high up. They like being hidden. So, to create a jungle gym that goes from your floor to your ceiling, with various levels of either platforms or boxes that they could rest or hide in, and strings hanging down that they could bat at some kind of, catnip-filled mouse or something like that. The more the cat is occupied in time, hopefully the less the cat would be attracted to scratching the couch. But as far as scratching the couch, you could try several aversive things.
Well, she's been scratching my new bed, the mattress.
Yeah.
Not the mattress, but the box spring.
Okay. That's expensive.
Can you just close your bedroom door?
Yeah, but I'd rather have her be in there with me.
You know, in my experience with cats, they do that. They do that because you react. And so when my cat wants to go out front, she will scratch the side of the couch that is near the front door. And if you ignore it, and of course it's not going to help your furniture, but it may stop.
No.
No, the doctor's shaking his head, but the doctor is wrong.
Well, I have some
very
of
possible.
This Miracle stain remover stuff, and I tried spraying that on there, and that seemed to help, but I just have to do it more frequently, and since it doesn't smell bad, I think I'll just keep using that.
Well, Susan, we got to let you go, but before I do, doctor, there's the stuff feel-away, right?
Yes.
Is there any kind of a negative feel-away that would repel an animal from something like that?
Yeah, there is a spray I can get, but it stinks bad. So I think I'm going to use this Miracle stain remover spray spray it on the surface, and that seems to help.
The feel away that Ray is referring to, Susan, is a pheromone, and it is often helpful mostly for problems that involve inter-cat aggression or friction or tension.
Yeah.
However,
I've tried it.
Well, Susan, when you have a behavioral problem, just using one measure is often not enough. And if you use a constellation of different behavioral moves and steps, then it'll be more successful in general. So depending upon what the situation that you needed the feel away for, just by itself, it may or may not make any difference, but other measures in addition to the feel away could very possibly create, when I get people, say for this noise phobia that we were talking about this time of year that a lot of dogs have, if you wait till the last day and just throw some pills at the dog, it might help, but it might not help. But if you took months if you took weeks and months beforehand to do behavior modification and to acclimate the dog so that the dog realizes, I don't always have to freak out when I hear sudden noises because of the various steps that you've taken all that effort to do, well, then you will have more success. And if you need to use a pill at the end, then it's going to be that much more successful than if you just throw the pills at the animal without any other steps taken. So the same with the feel away with the cat.
All right, Susan, thanks for the call. It's Pets and Vets. We're overdue for a break here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is our telephone number, and it's Pets and Vets today. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. Two emails here, Doc, and then we'll go back to the phones. This one came from Yael and Shandankin. Hello, my dog's gums bleed profusely wherever she chews or tugs, whenever she chews or tugs on any stick or toy, which she loves to do. She's 10 years old, a golden retriever mix. This has been happening for about 4 years. There's no sign of tooth decay or bad smell in her mouth. What might be the cause, and what can I do? And that's from Yael.
So, Yael, you're talking to a person who is very, very fixated almost on dental health for dogs and cats. There are so many things that we could do to help our pet's quality of life that people don't really think about, because most people don't look in their dog's mouths and they think that a dog or a cat ought to have dog breath or cat breath, and that's not the case. It's only because the teeth have not been cleaned. Now, if you look at us, we're brushing our teeth every single day, twice a day, if we're good with flossing, water pick, whatever, and yet we still are recommended to get our teeth cleaned at the hygienist twice a year. Now, that means that your animal, even if the dog were having their teeth brushed every day, they would still need to have the teeth cleaned. So while I respectfully disagree that there is no tooth decay,
okay,
I'm betting that there is, even if the teeth have been cleaned. And furthermore, the last thing I would want to make a plug for x-rays. Dental x-rays show us things that you would not see if you just use your eyes to look at the crowns of the teeth.
Okay, and this one came in from Susan, subject heading, unpopular cat. We've accumulated 6 cats over the last few years living upstate, strays who have settled in, been spayed, neutered, all healthy, socialized, etc. However, we have one male who is despised by 4 of the others. They continuously give him a hard time. He spends a lot of time avoiding them. They all go outside, and we often have to break up fights between him and the other cats outdoors. We feel bad for him. Everyone else gets along fine, and he's not mean or spiteful. Any ideas for trying to raise his popularity?
Wow, that's a challenge, Susan. I'm wondering, what is it about that cat that's making that cat despised by 4 of the other cats? It sounds like you have 6. That means that one other cat is not despising this one male. So I'd be curious to know, what is the difference between this male unpopular cat's relationship with the one undespiser compared to the 4 that despise him? And sometimes there's stuff going on between cats, Susan, that we don't know. We don't speak the lingo. We don't know. Who knows? I mean, it's inscrutable what's going on inside a cat's skull. So I have to think that there's something going on between this unpopular cat and the other ones, but I don't know what it is.
Interesting.
This would be a good time to consider that feel away that we seem to mention on almost every show,
yep,
which is the feline pheromone, whose main job is helping ease inter-cat friction. So I would go with the feel away, and then I would try to look at the cats from a cat's eye view, like, how do they interact? Who is starting the negative interactions? Maybe it's this one unpopular cat that you don't realize is instigating. You know, he might be an instigator.
The so bad seed.
I'd look. Well, bad seed. I don't want to pass judgments.
Fine,
but
okay.
If it's 4 others that don't like him, I would wonder about him
okay.
more than them.
Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Ron Scharf is our guest. Mark is in Marbletown. Hello, Mark.
How you doing? Thank you, Dr. Scharf, for this program.
Sure thing.
I have a 13-year-old Basenji, and he's healthy, except he started this cough 2 years ago. And my wife says, I don't hear it. It starts out with a sneeze, and then he sounds like he's coughing up a lung. Sometimes he can do this for 20 minutes, and I can only imagine that his throat must be getting raw. So I've taken him to the vet, and with x-rays and everything, they found nothing. Except, you know, he's 13. He has a slightly enlarged heart. But we've had him now on prednisone at 5 milligrams for 2 years, and that's twice a day, the 5 milligrams. And if his coughing drops off from it, and it does, then I have him on half a pill twice a day. And also antibiotics, like an entrofloxacin, 1.5 tablets twice a day. But I really don't like having him on these steroids forever. And he also lost his hearing 6 months ago. So, you know, I do bike him for 45 minutes every other day. And now he's just at a trot. He won't
run anymore. So I was just wondering, is there any experience with suddenly dogs developing a cough like this?
Absolutely, Mark. There are many possibilities of what can cause a cough. However, if it's responsive to prednisone, it suggests the possibility of an allergic thing. And guess what asthma is called? It's called an allergic bronchitis. So I'd be curious, do you see it worse in certain seasons than others? Or is it the same all year long, Mark?
I guess it worsens a little more, but I keep changing things. Like, I've changed his bedding, I've changed his food, I put a whole house air filter in and a whole house AC system. So I change these things all the time, so I don't know which one's actually helping him. And it was an incredible pollen season this year. And oddly enough, one of our cats slightly does it also. Mm. He started it first. Then the dog, I don't say he mimics it, but it sounds like a, that's what it sounds like. So his head goes way down and his tail unrolls and goes out straight. And it looks like, you know, he's really straining to cough, but it's an unproductive cough. So I vacuum all the time.
Okay.
I've even taken his bedding and thrown it in the freezer in case it's mites or, you know, I don't know where to go from here.
All right.
So sometimes, Mark, what can happen, I'll have an animal brought in, and it's an old dog, and the person comes in and basically says that the dog is like an old man in the bathroom, like coughing, you know, like this kind of thing. And so I think that sometimes with age, you can get a mild, whether it's a chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or the asthma we were talking about a minute ago. I think that I'm assuming that this dog is negative for heartworm disease, is that right?
They test him for that, and I have him on heartworm pills.
Good, good. So it's not likely to be that. You know, even if it's not allergic, most things will look a little better with prednisone because it's an anti-inflammatory.
Right.
And so if you have an infection and you're taking the inflammation down, you still have the infection even though the pred is making the symptoms look less serious. So the pred, if it's a dramatic help, then it makes me wonder about asthma. And there are things that you could do, Mark, for asthma that don't involve oral medication. There are, believe it or not, inhalers that could be used. But you should get yourself a firm diagnosis, which sometimes you can't do with just an x-ray and a blood test. Sometimes you can. Sometimes it needs a scope. So it depends on how involved you want to be. But I think that some of the things you're doing with the bedding, the air conditioning, the food are good, but you mentioned the pollen, and you did not mention whether or not the heavy pollen this year made the cough worse. So if it does, then we think an allergy, and there's ways to deal with that that don't even necessarily require prednisone or corticosteroids. So there are various options. The key is to getting an accurate diagnosis, and if you say that the cat's doing it also, well, then I got to wonder, it's either a coincidence or there's something in your system, in your house, that's causing more than one animal to have a situation.
Well, Mark, thank you very much for the call. Is it possible the dog could be allergic to the cat?
Yes, it's possible. When we do our allergy tests, one of the things that they are tested for is human dander. So in other words, our dogs can be allergic to us. Mm. So if that's the case, I'm assuming that surely dogs could be allergic to cats.
Could they be allergic to their own dander? Okay, let's go back to the phones. Dave in Albany. Dave, you're on.
Hi, doctor. I rescued a dog a year and a half ago, and he's always been a picky eater. I buy him canned food, 79 cents, and I buy $3 a can. He's picky, and I give him blue dry. But he seems, I've had him a year and a half now, he seems more picky now. He doesn't want to eat. He does eat eventually, but it's very odd. I bought him a can, $3 a can. It was almost edible for humans, and he snubbed it. And he eventually will eat, but he's healthy. I bring him to the vet. He's had all his, and I told the vet about it. They just said he's a picky, you know, I've tried every can in the store. And like I said, it doesn't matter if it's the cheap or the good
stuff. Boy.
He's just picky. What, have you ever heard of a dog that has no interest in eating? I actually feed him with a spoon now.
Oh, my God. Have you ever taken the dog to Denny's, Dave?
So, Dave, the $3 versus the 79 cents doesn't make a difference to the dog unless you show the dog a receipt, of course, and then maybe the dog would reconsider. But I think that, Dave, is the dog too skinny?
No, he's got a good, I think he's a little underweight, but the vet seems to think he's okay, so.
I wouldn't worry about it then. You know, if it was a cat that's not presented the food of its choice will go on a hunger strike and it could be dangerous, literally. Dogs, not so much, okay? What often happens, Dave, that I see is that the dog gets picky because the person allows them to get picky. And you start jumping through all these hoops to get the dog to eat something, and then the dog is playing you. And, you know, this may or may not be the case in your situation, but if the dog's not too skinny, I'd throw the spoon away or at least put it away. And, look, you know, dog, you know, you get the dog, you know, a few choices, but I will put in a plug for canned food, Dave. Canned food is better than dry food in every respect but one. The only way dry food is better in my mind than canned food is the convenience of it. But if you get canned food, there might be more of a chance that that dog's going to take to it faster.
Well, I do mix the can with the blue dry, and, you know, he snubs it, and then I'll put dry out, and he'll go and eat the dry, and then it's weird.
He prefers dry to canned?
Some days he won't eat the can at all. I got to throw it away, and then he'll eat dry. And then the next day he won't touch the dry, and I'll put can in it and mix it. And, you know, 3 hours later I see him picking at it. Just, I never saw a dog so picky in my life.
Dave, I applaud your dedication to your dog's good health and nutrition. I would say don't worry about it as much. I would say if the dog's not too skinny and you do some blood work and all the numbers are good, and make sure that the teeth are okay. Make sure that it's not a dental problem. I'd say don't worry about it.
I heard you talking about that. I have four cats, and they've all had dentals, and my dog has been – I make sure that dental is – no, he's been checked for his teeth, and everything's fine. But the vet just said he has no interest in food until the last minute of – eating.
You know, some people don't care about food either, which to me is foreign, but some people are skinny and some people eat very little and they do okay, and some people eat a lot and they don't get overweight. And some dogs are like that. Some dogs, some of them are picky, some of them are really into the food. Some dogs live to eat, some dogs eat to live. And if he's not too skinny and he's doing well and he's got a good quality of life, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
All right. Well, thanks, Dave. Let's go to Amelia in Boston. Amelia, you're on. Hello.
Hello, Dr. Sharp?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi, Amelia.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I have a small mixed dog who's going to be about 4 years old soon, and she seems to have a noise phobia that is particular to this fire station whistle thing that goes off every night at 9 o'clock in my town. It sounds like a foghorn, and she literally jumps and starts to attack like our furniture and pillows and like my son's stuffed animals.
Wow.
And she has tried to go after us too when it goes off.
Well, is she? Are you saying that this dog, Amelia, has no problem with fireworks or thunder?
She's actually pretty good in fireworks and thunder both. Yeah.
Wow.
And this foghorn, and I know the kind of fire whistle you're talking about too. They sound weird.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
they do, and it's not something that a lot of people would notice, but once she did, she just set her off.
Okay. So, Amelia, what I would say is what we referenced before about behavior modification. And behavior modification for a noise phobia is doable. You got to put some time and effort into it. But what you want to do as part of that behavior modification is you want to get a good recording of that foghorn firehouse siren, okay? And then what the behavior modification does is almost no matter what the problem that the dog has is, there are these psychology terms called counterconditioning and desensitization. Basically, what that means in normal English, the counterconditioning is teaching the dog a new behavior for her repertoire. And that behavior is called whatever you want, but usually we'll say settle. Okay? And what you're doing is you're teaching the dog that whenever the dog is settled, it gets good stuff. Now, to do this, for it to be successful, you can't be giving the dog good stuff without the dog having earned it. So what I always teach my clients, whenever they bring a dog in for the first time, especially a puppy, is I recommend not giving a dog anything good that they like without them having earned it. That means not only doing what they're told, but doing it calmly. So what you're doing is you're cultivating calm and obedient behavior in a dog. Now, if they're getting their meals for nothing, their treats for nothing, all the toys for nothing without having to earn it, then they don't have that motivation. But if you give them nothing good without them having earned it, then they got some skin in the game. Now, at that point, what you're doing is you're teaching the dog that calm behavior gets them good stuff, and the lack of calm behavior does not get them good stuff. And then you start introducing that good recording of that foghorn-like whistle at a very low level. Now, this is something that I book an hour to do a behavior modification consult with my clients for, Amelia, because this is, it's involved, okay? But in a nutshell, you're teaching the dog how to behave in a settled fashion or relaxed fashion, and then you begin to introduce the tiny, tiny amounts of the thing that is getting them set off, like your foghorn firehouse. And then, but you have the volume on one, and you put them into a settle, they're fine, and then you gradually get it up to two, and you reward them when they are being calm for it, and eventually you do that for a while, and you're up to volume 9 or 10, and they're still doing okay, so that when the actual foghorn comes, they're a little better equipped to deal with it. That's in a nutshell what I take an hour to go through with my clients to teach them about.
Well, Amelia, thanks for the call. We have to take a break here. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Pets and Vets, and we'll be back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number's 800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. At one email here, Dr. Ann from Adams writes, about 2.5 years ago, I adopted a beagle mix. She's 10 now. Just the last 2 months, she started a very strange jaw clapping. Sometimes it also includes rapid eye blinking, head shivers. Other times, it's just jaw clapping, either rapid eye blinking and a very spacey look. She doesn't do it often, except yesterday she did jaw clapping 5 times in about 2 hours. Of course, I'm going to contact the vet, but I wonder if you've ever seen this or know what it might be. And that's from Ann in Adams.
So this is kind of intriguing, Ann. Jaw clapping, does that mean like chattering, I'm wondering? Or is it like one violent clap? And then another one soon after. So I'm not sure about jaw clapping, but if you're talking jaw clapping, head shivering, rapid eye blinking, I'm wondering, could it be a seizure disorder?
Sounds like it.
I mean, are we losing any consciousness? Are we getting a glassy-eyed look?
Well, she did say spacey look.
A spacey look.
Yeah.
So you might be dealing, Anne, with a seizure disorder, and there might be a medication that would ameliorate that.
And what would the most common one be?
Well, we used to use phenobarbital as our mainstay up until about 10 or 15 years ago, and some came along that didn't have as many side effects.
Yeah.
So one is called levetiracetam. That's the generic name. Another one is called zonisamide. I think the levetiracetam trade name is Keppra, people might have heard of.
Yeah.
So there are various to look at. There's potassium bromide, but that causes them to eat too much and they get fat.
Ah.
So most anticonvulsants have pluses and minuses, and you got to balance. It's very careful balancing, you know, what the negative effects are. And indeed, I don't even put anyone on an anticonvulsant unless their frequency of seizures is often enough to justify it, because most of them eventually have side effects.
Okay.
And I'll also look at not only frequency, but how long is the seizure? Are they cluster seizures? You know, et cetera.
Yeah.
So you got to weigh it, whether or not it's worth it.
All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest on this edition of Pets and Vets. We go to Mike in Catskill. Mike, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a cat that is about 12 years old, and about 2 years ago, I noticed that he was sneezing a lot, and I took him to the vet, and they gave him azithromycin. And he took that for a couple of weeks. When he stopped that, the sneezing came back after maybe 4 or 5 weeks. And I went back to the vet, and again, they gave him azithromycin. And we've been going through this cycle, the same cycle. The vet said that the cat has a virus, and his immune system isn't taking care of the virus. And that the azithromycin just knocks it down a little bit, and then it comes back. So I'm wondering if there's anything I can do that will cure my cat.
Yes. So it's very common in cats, Mike, to have chronic or recurrent upper respiratory infections. And the most common cats that'll get that are rescue cats or stray cats. In other words, cats that did not get immunity from their moms, because the two worst upper respiratory infection viruses are included in what we call the cat distemper vaccine.
Mm.
So a mom that's up to date on distemper vaccines that has a litter is going to be conferring some immunity. However, there are many other viruses and bacteria that can cause chronic upper respiratory. It's probably the most common thing in a cat is upper respiratory problems. So if it responded to the azithromycin, Mike, it means that there was a bacterium involved, because that's an antibiotic. So what I recommend doing, Mike, there is something called a PCR. Now, that's a fancy technology. The letters stand for polymerase chain reaction. And what you do is all it takes is a swab in the back of the throat and a swab in the eye, not on the eye, but in that little pocket under the lower eyelid. And you do this very fancy technology. It's very cool. And it'll test for 8 of the most common things that'll cause chronic upper respiratory infections in cats. And 4 or 5 of them are viruses, and 3 of them are bacteria. So the viruses, you can't do anything about unless it's so bad that it justifies using antiviral medication. And that's an option. But the bacteria, there are several bacteria. They're often responsive to doxycycline-type medication. The azithromycin might be good for that. So there's a Bordetella. There are 2 weird bacteria in there that I think are rickettsial bacteria called chlamydia. And I'm blanking on the other one. But they are, in people, they're sexually transmitted. But in cats, they're respiratory. And those can respond to medication. So the thing is there enough damage from way back when, 2 years ago, whenever, that if the anatomy in the nose was affected, Mike, well, then you might have something that's more permanent, because you got this little tiny fine lacework in the back of your nose. It's this trabecular kind of, it's like paper thin with holes in it. And it doesn't take much to destroy the turbinates, they're called. And if the turbinates are gone, then they're not going to be grown back. So that's something not likely for your cat, only having started at 10 years of age, getting the problem, compared to a kitten that's developing that has a bad upper respiratory and it does a number on the turbinates. So I think that there's a good chance, Mike, that you could help your cat get a diagnosis.
Okay, Mike, thank you very much. Bridget in Albany is next. Bridget.
Hi. I have a cat who's 1 year and 3 months old, and he does the normal, like, cat kneading thing, which I understand is like a kind of comforting gesture from, like, needing milk from their mother, but he also sucks on the, like, a blanket that he's on while he does that. And I wonder if those two things are related or if he's just a weird cat.
No, he's not a weird cat, and they are related. And the conventional wisdom, Bridget, is that this cat was taken away from that mom nursing too soon.
Yeah.
And the cat's got issues. And it's very common. Right. And some people let them do it and don't worry about it. Personally, if my cat were doing it, I would stop the behavior as a kind of expression of, no, you shouldn't do that the rest of your life. Will they listen to you? Mm. No, cats don't listen to people. However, it's not likely that it's going to cause a problem, Bridget, but I think that it is a function of having been peremptorily stopped from nursing and suckling.
Mm, I think you're right. Thank you very much for the call, and let's now go to Laura in Lee. Laura.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
You
sure
bet.
Thing.
Oh, good. Okay. So I have a wonderful beagle mix that I adopted from the shelter about 14 years ago. They thought he was a year old at that time. So he's around 15 years old now. And his entire life, he's had this behavior that my vet described as a backward sneeze, which is not a concept that is very understandable to me. But what he does is he suddenly will start snorting, kind of like in bringing in air in a snorting kind of way over and over and over and over. Maybe he does this for 30 seconds, maybe even 45 seconds. And it's, I'm just wondering what it is, and I'm not sure if it's uncomfortable for him. I just don't know.
We've heard this before on this program, the reverse sneeze, and I do have trouble picturing it myself. So go ahead.
So it is, I think, from what you're describing, Laura, a reverse sneeze, and it is something that is not uncommon. And if you look in the book, I've done some reading up on it. There's a million theories, meaning we don't know what causes it. My personal theory, Laura, is that it is allergy related. I'm thinking there's something tickling them in there, and it's causing their sneezing or reverse sneezing mechanism to go into high gear for a brief period of time. There are people that can comfort their dog by doing various things like stroking their neck under their neck and stroking in a downward direction with the fingers. There are some other folk remedies that you could, you know, go online and see what people recommend. I have never heard, Laura, about it causing a bad problem. So if you really wanted to look into it, you would need to sedate the dog so that a exam of the throat could take place. A pharyngeal exam could tell you, is there any obvious inflammation in either the tonsils or the the epiglottis or whatever? Because if there's an area that's redder than the rest of the throat, then, you know, it kind of draws your attention. So that could be done. There could be imaging that you could do of the nasal passages, etc. Is it worth putting a lot of effort and money into it? Probably not. If you have a lot of time and money, then go ahead, have a party, look into it. But it's not an unusual thing, Laura. And personally, I've never heard of it causing a bad problem.
All right, Laura, thanks so much for the call. Now to Jeff in Palinville. Jeff.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a 7-year-old female Basenji mix. And she does this neurotic licking. She'll lick a spot, a raw spot on her leg. And she's daddy's girl. And I'm a performer. I'm on the road a lot. So what happens is when I'm away, she'll do that occasionally. And so I just wonder how to get her, keep her from doing that.
Okay.
So do I understand that she's not licking the leg when you're there, only when you're not there, when you're gone?
Well, it starts when I'm away, and then she'll continue to do it after I'm back. She'll eventually stop it if I'm home long enough, and then when I go away again, perhaps she may or may not start it. But when she does start it, it's always when I've been away.
Interesting. So what we're talking, Jeff, I think that there are three possibilities. It's either an old injury that never totally healed up well, or like a little splinter that got in there, or something from years ago that's always drawing the dog's attention to it, or there's an allergy involved, or it's neurotic, like you're saying. Now, most people jump to possibility number three, but I don't think it's as often neurotic as many people think.
Huh.
And what you could do about it depends, obviously, on what's causing it. Now, there are, you know, the allergy component is supported by many times when I used to back in the day use prednisone more often than I do now, you give them prednisone, they stop the licking. Well, that kind of makes me wonder that an allergy oftentimes is a factor going on. An X-ray would tell you if there is any obvious evidence of a bony injury. It won't tell you if there was a soft tissue injury that might still be lingering. Sometimes acupuncture can help that. You know, you use the needles, you surround the lesion, and sometimes you need to use some cortisone either locally, you know, as an injectable in the leg, or systemically, which is a good thing to avoid. The long-term prednisone has bad side effects. And then, is it neurotic? If it's neurotic, then the way to test that is to just put the dog onto an antidepressant and see whether or not it makes a difference, because that's what we'll use. Generic Prozac is called fluoxetine. You will not see a response until they've been on it at least 4 weeks, 5 weeks. But that would be – I don't want to be cavalier about using an antidepressant, but it's a backdoor, so to speak, a backdoor way to see is your neurosis theory correct.
Okay. Jeff, thanks a lot. We only have a couple of minutes left here. Let's jump over to Kingston. Susanna is on. Hello, Susanna.
Hello, hi.
Yeah, you're on. You have about 2 minutes.
Hi. Sorry. Okay. So I have two cats, and I think we have narrowed it down to the one cat who is the culprit of this. She has started to pee on our kitchen floor, which is a bare wood floor, in front of our door, which we live on a second-story apartment, but we do live next to a feral cat community. And I'm curious as to whether or not this might be her, maybe just like making sure her scent is near the door, or if she is a quite stressed-out cat often, or if maybe this is something that could possibly be on the medical end.
So that's a great question, Susanna. And I would wonder about your first theory that she's just marking her own territory because she feels like she's got it protected with all these feral cats next
door. Do female cats mark like that?
Yeah. Female cats can do that. Yeah. The possibility of her being anxious would depend, Suzanne, upon whether or not you see her displaying anxiety behaviors. I mean, if the peeing at the front door to your second floor place is the only thing she does, I'm not hearing about any anxiety necessarily. It could be anxiety, but without any other anxious types of behavior, I would wonder about the feral cat colony because there's a smell. It's in the air comes in the room, she smells it. So I'm with you on your first theory there.
Well, in 30 seconds, what could she do to test the theory without letting the cat outside?
Yeah, close the windows.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Somehow to stop that scent from getting into her. And then also this, we keep on coming back to this feel away, whether or not that would help when it is a territorial problem. It surely can't hurt to get some feel away and get enough for the size of your place, whether it's a plug-in or a spray.
Mm-hmm.
That's a place to start.
Okay. You know, the fact that it happens only in one spot then would tend to argue against a physical problem?
It doesn't guarantee that it's not a physical problem, but I think it's more supportive of it being a mental problem.
Well, yeah. Thank you, Dr. Ron Schar, for being here. Support comes from Landis Arboretum Esperance, presenting the Metowee River Theater's Ring Dove this Saturday, 8 p.m. at Full Moon Concert Series this Friday, made possible with grant funds from Montgomery County, landisarboretum.org. The Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, celebrating the 100th anniversary of Bauhaus with works from the museum's permanent collection, sponsored in part by Warren County, HydeCollection.org. And Interactive Media Consulting, proudly supporting the Open Studio Tours of Washington County, featuring 15 open studios July 19th through July 21st. StudioTour.org for details. Once again, thanks to Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York, for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Great calls, as always. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Amber Sickles. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show, Bob Berman will be joined by Valerie Rapson of the Dudley Observatory. We'll talk astronomy. Right now, stand by for 51%.